Welcome to the Gifters Podcast. I'm your host, Christopher Kai. This podcast is sponsored by the GPS Online Program, which teaches you how to turn your story into a successful speaking and online coaching business. For more information, go to ChristopherKai.com. Our guest today is Guy Donsey. He's an author as well as eco-futurist. Guy, welcome to our podcast.
Well, thanks, Christopher. It's a delight to be here.
So I've heard eco, I've heard of futurist, but I've never heard of an eco-futurist. So did you coin that term or just tell us about that term?
Kind of, maybe a little bit. I mean, there's so much talk about dystopia and gloom and doom at the moment. So, and I'm a really an ecotopian. I really believe we have the potential for an amazing future ahead of us once we get through what I call our ocean of trouble. So I'm a futurist with a very, very big ecological lens, because if we don't have an ecological lens about the future of our Earth itself, there's not much point in being a futurist.
So let's talk about this passion you have. I mean, were you a young boy growing up and you had this great admiration for nature? Like, I'm always curious about the backstory and the origin story. When did you realize
no,
you
had a... The background, I was a very shy, quiet, retreating child because I had a period of abandonment and being stuck in an orphanage for a while when I was just 3 years old, and then packed off to boarding school. And then I was picked on and bullied and blah, blah, blah. And I began to wonder, why does nature seem to be so harmonious when humans seem to be fighting and arguing and causing such terrible distress among themselves? So I launched myself into life at the age of sort of 16, 17 with that question in mind. The most important thing is why that contradiction when nature seems harmonious and humans are not?
That's a very profound awareness. And have you come up with an answer?
Well, actually, I solved that, the simple answer. I did tackle that and solve that within 3 or 4 years by coming across the work of a French scientist and Catholic Jesuit priest called Théo de Chardin, and then an Indian called Sri Aurobindo, who basically said, we're evolving. We're still just learning. And all our mistakes are part of our learning. But what this implied is that we're evolving towards something. And the key to understand where we're evolving towards is the nature of our consciousness, that consciousness itself, or the capacity for consciousness, is evolving. So a worm has very limited consciousness. Humans with our massive, incredible brain complexity and our ability to communicate have very, you know, advanced consciousness. And yet we may be just the beginning of a billion-year journey. Where are we going in future when we explore what our consciousness truly is when we look inward to it?
Yeah, I mean, this can literally be an entire 15-episode TV series, but in terms of our time, in terms of this eco-futurist, why should we care or want to care or want to learn about eco-futurists? Like, what does that even mean? Like, tell us, because the thing is, I had a client one time. He's a very successful entrepreneur. He makes hundreds of millions of dollars, and he has all these visions, and he loves to help and inspire people. But I said, you know what, Doug? Your employees might not care about your vision. They care about their livelihood, their families, and going home safely to their family. So I was just kind of keeping it super simple. So for you, why should the person care about eco-futurists? Like, you know, I'm curious, like, what is, because you seem like a very macro, big thinker, thought leader guy, and yet people that have jobs that might be in risk right now might not be caring about that. So I'm just
I'm very involved in the practical detail level as well. So we need to care because, number one, the climate crisis is really going to be on top of us. We're heading forward towards a 4 degree in Celsius temperature increase by the end of the century. And the last time the world was 3 degrees warmer, the sea level was 25 meters higher. And I know that I'm speaking to you in Florida. So Florida's gone. And the massive increase in droughts and famines and hunger and storms and stuff is coming. On top of that, we've lost 60% of the world's wildlife in the last, you know, 50 years alone. And we're losing topsoil at such a massive rate because of industrial farming. That's, we've only got about 60 seasons, 60 harvest seasons left. So
what does topsoil mean, Gaia?
Sorry?
What does topsoil mean?
Topsoil is what you call dirt in America. It's the stuff that everything we eat depends on that topsoil to grow. It's what farmers depend on. But when you inundate the farms with chemicals and mass industrial techniques, you slowly destroy this topsoil through erosion. It happened in America in the 1930s. Now it's happening globally. Whereas regenerative organic farming restores the soil and grows more food. Regenerative forestry restores the forest. Regenerative approach to the oceans restores the fish in the oceans. And frankly, regenerative businesses can help to restore world's ecosystems and our life systems while generating profit for their owners and jobs for their workers. And so the economic thing we're talking about is building a cooperative economy as opposed to sort of such a dog-eat-dog competitive economy. And when you look around the world, cooperative economies are generating more stability in jobs, better returns, fewer business failures, and a much lower contrast between the highest earning and the lowest earning. So in Mondragon in northern Spain, where they've got 80,000 workers working cooperatively, it's a 8-to-1 difference between the lower worker and the bosses. And in North America, it's 1-to-800 or even 1-to-8,000 pay difference, which makes people angry, which makes people confused, which makes people then drift towards conspiracy theories and extreme answers to what's going wrong in the world.
Yeah, can you dive a little deeper into that example in Spain? Like, how do you feel they go about creating this more of a cooperative mindset?
Well, in Spain, what happened was after coming out of the Civil War and the chaos of Franco and stuff going on in the 1930s, 40s, there was a Catholic priest who wanted to sort of say, is there a way to build an economy that's not fascist and it's not capitalist and it's not state socialist? And he came up with the traditional Basque way of living together, which is cooperative. And he said, if we start cooperatives, and so he set up a training college, and some of his students started a metalwork cooperative, and then they branched off and started another metalwork cooperative, and then they started their own bank, and then they started their own college and their own university, and now they've got 100 cooperatives that are stable in the Basque area of Spain, in the town of Mondragon. They got branches all over the world as well. And they came through the great crash of 2008 with no job losses, because they all took a share in a reduced wage or reduced income because the market shrunk a bit. And you've got workers who feel respect for the jobs they have, and they're not going to offshore their jobs because they are the owners of those jobs. They literally own the companies themselves that they work in. So why would they offshore it or send it elsewhere? So a cooperative economy brings you a stability of jobs, a stability of income, and a sort of positive outlook towards the future, which is the foundation for what I believe needs to be a new ecological civilization. I'm throwing another term in there for you.
Yeah, another 15 episode TV series we could talk about.
Yes,
but,
that's right.
From a day-to-day standpoint, what do you encourage all of us to do more, think more, or perhaps to be more aware of? Giving, like I said, your topic is so powerful, profound, and deep, but in the context of this format, really, I want to at least give them a first step or next step, frankly. So what is a next step we can all do?
Ouch. I read books, frankly. Don't learn off the internet. It's a terrible way to learn. I've been working on this book on the economics of kindness. I've really plowed into economics because that's the core of our misunderstandings, because economics is like kind of a high priest propaganda based on the belief that everyone is selfish and super rational, which is just not true. So, and then I've always followed the belief, I've been self-employed all my life, that follow my inner heart. What is my passion asking me to do? What am I really enthusiastic to do? But follow that inner passion, but premised on a sense of service to the larger universe, the larger concept. I've always said, here I am in service to this unfolding brilliance of nature, of reality, of creation. What can I do to help this unfolding? So I'd never pursue happiness. I pursue service to others, and happiness comes and sits on my shoulder like a little bird, but you can't ever find happiness by chasing it down. It doesn't work that way.
And what book or books would you recommend that we read?
Oh my goodness. I hardly know where to begin on that one.
Well, you've written a few books. You can share one of your books that you wrote.
Well, yeah. I mean, I spent 3 years writing a novel called Journey to the Future, A Better World is Possible, because I wanted to convey the fact that the future could be really good and not just a mess. And it's a novel set in Vancouver in the year 2032 with a character who gets to have 4 days in that future to explore what it's like for the future of farming, of business, of the economy, of transportation, of the climate crisis, of homelessness and housing, affordable housing, and all that sort of stuff. And I fell in love with the future which my character had visited. That's the amazing thing. I didn't want to leave that future because it was so amazing. When you put the pieces together, and to know that all around the world, there are people working so hard to make a better future, a beautiful future. But nothing happens unless you or I step in and do something personally. There are no impersonal forces that are guaranteeing a better future for us. Whether it's in India or Taiwan or South Africa or Brazil, there are individuals working to make a better world. So find out who they are, meet with them, talk with them, join with them, so that we're all doing this together. Because most of the people in the world want to live in a world with more cooperative values, more kindness, more helping each other. There's a minority who want to live by values of status and self-importance and sort of pushing people around. But the majority of us are caring and kind. We just need to work together to make it happen.
I love that. And that's a great way to end our interview, Guy. Thank you so much for being
My website is The Practical Utopian, which is what I call myself, thepracticalutopian.ca.
Great, Guy. Thank you so much for your time. Have a great day.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Gifters Podcast. If you want to learn how to turn your story into a successful speaking and online coaching business, go to christopherkai.com to learn more.